In August, Robert Jones will begin his new position as president of the University of Washington in Seattle. It comes after a 9-year tenure as chancellor of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where Jones helped raise record amounts of money and grew the student body by 15,000. He also led the university through a state budget impasse and the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can tell you, As far as my wife and I are concerned, you know, this place gets under your skin after about 9 years or so. And not to say that's just happened, but it is, because this is like leaving home for us. It's leaving a place where we feel a deep sense of connection, not only at the university, but in the community as well.
In a wide-ranging conversation, Chancellor Jones talks with me, Reginald Hardwick, about how the university is fighting back as the Trump administration withholds billions of federal funds from higher education. Watch our interview Thursday, May 1st at 7:30 p.m. on WILL-TV, or listen to The Dialogue Show Saturday, May 3rd at 11 a.m. on FM 101.1 Illinois Soul. Welcome back to Dialogue. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul. Illinois is reporting its first confirmed measles case of the year. The Department of Public Health says the case involves an adult in far southern Illinois. The state is working to identify all potential exposure locations, but IDPH says the risk of community transmission to the general public in Illinois remains low. A difference compared to Texas, where more than 600 cases are reported this year. 2 children have died there. There are also outbreaks currently in Michigan, Indiana, and New Mexico. Earlier this month, on the 21st show, I talked with Dr. Arthi Barnes, Chief Medical Officer of the Illinois Department of Public Health, about measles and how to reduce your risk of being infected.
So measles is a highly contagious virus that spreads through the air when people breathe it out. It can also sometimes land in your eyes, what we call the conjunctiva, the outer surface of the eyes, and your body takes it in from that point and can cause a pretty severe infection. Now, a lot of people take a time to develop measles from the time that they get exposed to the time they start manifesting any symptoms at all. It could be up to 21 days. And when they do manifest symptoms, it can really occur more as a what looks like a common cold, a cough, a little bit of a fever. You have a runny nose, but you do develop a very classic rash at some point in that course once you start developing symptoms. And so for us, we really think of measles as a disease or an infection that can cause a rash, even though some early signs of it may make you think that you just have like a regular common cold.
Understand the measles rash looks very particular. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so it's called in medical terms a maculopapular rash, but it could be flat, slightly bumpy, reddish. It spreads all over. It usually starts on the hairline. People notice the rash right on their heads, and then it spreads to the rest of the body. So the spread of the rash is also pretty classic from that standpoint. But I think the key thing to remember is that it's not just a common cold-like illness. It's not just about having mild symptoms and a rash. About 20% of the children, young children under 5, get admitted to the hospital with this, because this rash can, this infection can then spread to becoming a pneumonia and a brain infection. And I think that is what I'd like people to be aware of. It is not safe to just say, I'm going to just expose myself to measles and get a natural immunity, because the chances, especially if you're younger or if you're pregnant, could be devastating and can be very deadly too, as we've learned, unfortunately.
Outbreaks in Texas and as close as Michigan and even eastern Indiana, should we be concerned?
Yeah, we should be concerned, because there are so many chances of infections coming into Illinois. And I want to remind all Illinoisans that we are resilient. We faced measles in 2024. We were very successful in doing that, especially thanks to our local health departments who swooped in and got very high-risk populations, the ones who hadn't received vaccinations, vaccinated in record time. And we prevented a fairly explosive situation from occurring. We maxed out at 67 cases total in the entire state in 24 in the midst of an outbreak. So I'm really hoping that we go back to remembering what it takes to prevent outbreaks in the situation, which is truly effective vaccination, fast and early effective vaccination. Being protected already by the time you get exposed to measles is what will prevent massive outbreaks from occurring and will help create a cocooning effect around our vulnerable community members, children under the age of 6 months who you cannot get vaccinated. So it's going to be important to remember that that is the best way to protect yourself and protect the people you love around you.
If there are cases that develop in our state, what are the policies? What is, how does, how do doctors swing into action?
So we usually get notified at the public health level within 24 hours of medical provider diagnosing measles, or we should be. We have 24 hours to get notified of a measles case. And at that point, the public health system really starts getting activated and tries to look at all the exposures that occur. We call it contact tracing. And we make sure that the people who are exposed, if they are non-immune, as in their bodies are not already protected from measles, they haven't been fully vaccinated, then we can offer them something called post-exposure prophylaxis. But the vaccine for post-exposure prophylaxis has to be given within 72 hours of that exposure. So everything is on a very tight timeline. We can also give other kinds of protection. It's called an immunoglobulin within 6 days of exposure. So the most vulnerable, those who cannot get vaccinated, get that protection. But to get to that point, we have to mobilize fast and find out who's been exposed. And we really need partners in that space, both our healthcare communities, or if it's a school, our school communities, to be able to act fast on that information. And that's how the public health system protects the rest of the community from getting an extremely large outbreak of measles. And as far as other states are concerned, we also make sure if any exposures cross over to any other state, we make sure that communication is intact and we react and respond and communicate to other states saying there is someone who might have been exposed in your state. Please watch them. The other piece that's important is that if you are truly exposed and haven't been immunized, like your body is not protected from measles, then you'd have to stay out of school or work, be in isolation for about 21 days. And that's a long time for people to take time off from school and work, which is why it's really important to be wise about this and make sure that you are vaccinated as soon as possible so that if you are exposed to measles, then you don't have to be excluded from school or work or community gatherings for such a long period of time.
We know RFK Jr. is a vaccine skeptic, although he recently backed vaccination as the best way to prevent measles from spreading. Why are vaccines the most effective way to combat measles?
So vaccines work because they remind our bodies how to fight the infection when we actually face the infection. So it is a way to prime your body in such a way that when you finally are exposed and the infection enters your body, it's able to combat it really fast so that you don't get severe illness. So with measles, just 2 doses of the vaccine is 97% effective. It is one of the most effective vaccines we have right now. So, it is an important way of protecting yourself. One thing to remember that I use the analogy of a seatbelt. We wear seatbelts in cars not to prevent accidents, but to prevent severe injury when an accident occurs. And if you believe that that protection, that preventative protection of wearing a seatbelt is important, then by that same stretch, you should think about vaccines as an important tool to just protect yourself if you face a threat like an infection that's vaccine preventable.
The IDPH recently rolled out a measles simulator dashboard. How can our listeners use that to stay updated?
So, yes, we have our school outbreak simulator dashboard. So, I really encourage those who really work with schools or who have children who attend schools, please look at that dashboard. It works off of the 23-24 school vaccination data that the Illinois State Board of Education has available. And it lets you know that if you only have, say, 80% of the children in that school who have had a measles vaccination, if a case of measles is introduced in that school, what would that mean? How large would that outbreak be in that school based on the vaccine levels? And we're grateful that we have schools that have 99% vaccination rates, 100% vaccination rates. But what we've noticed overall is that in Illinois, our kindergarten children aren't as well vaccinated as our older children. And so I really want to encourage our kindergarten group to get their children vaccinated, especially if you have a child in that age, because again, the risk of that child ending up in the hospital are so much higher. So I would say use the simulator dashboard to make an educated decision about, is it time to get my child vaccinated? What is the risk if my child is not vaccinated and there's a large outbreak in school that my child would have to be excluded from school for 21 days? And again, this is really to demonstrate the impact of what would happen if there is a case of measles introduced in those schools.
All right. Well, Dr. Arthi Barnes, Chief Medical Officer of the Illinois Department of Public Health, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for talking about this important topic.
Before Tina Knowles became known as the force behind the scenes, helping to style and guide her daughters, Beyoncé Knowles Carter and Solange Knowles, she owned a beauty shop. She liked to cook and care for her family and friends, and she prided herself on helping other people achieve their dreams. Now, in a new book titled Matriarch, Knowles steps into the spotlight herself with the inside story of how she helped her daughters achieve rare heights of stardom as entertainers and cultural icons. NPR's Michelle Martin recently spoke from Washington, D.C. with Tina Knowles, who was at a studio in Los Angeles.
Welcome. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
May I call you Miss Tina?
Of course.
I was struggling with how to describe your book. It tells the story of Black entrepreneurship, how you and your former husband, Matthew Knowles, built your business. And it's also the story of mothers, being a mother, the mothers we had, the ones we wished we had. It's a lot. And I was wondering, when you started writing this book, is that what you started with, or did it just become that?
You know, I actually was going to write a book about behind the scenes things with my career in the music business, but it just came out of me. Once I started writing, it was like I just wanted to tell my story.
One of the things that I got from the book was how hard you had to fight to allow the girls to express their style. There was a magazine cover shoot where they wanted to put Beyoncé's hair in a bun. And you were like, they're not going to put your hair in a bun. Why does her hair have to be in a bun? And also, Maxwell was in that same cover shoot. And you talked about the fact that this was at a point where, if people know Maxwell, he had this crown of hair that was kind of his signature, but they wanted him to put on a hat. And you were like, don't let them make you put on a hat. You took his hat off and were picking out his hair.
Right. I took his hat off. I didn't even know him. But he looked sad. And so I walked over and I said, why do you look so sad? And he said, oh, they made me put this hat on. and I took it off. And I took my pick and started picking his hair out. And Beyonce was mortified. She was like, Mom, what are you doing? But Maxwell and I connected that day, and we are really good friends. And, you know, he tells that story all the time, because why did they want Beyonce to put her hair in a bun and for him to put a hat on? I didn't like that.
This happened like over and over again. And in fact, one of the music companies that you talked to actually talked to your ex, Matthew Knowles, who was their manager, and actually said that you were holding the girls back.
Well, they were just doing what they knew. And they felt like four black girls, curvy country black girls from Texas with big hair and very Motown-esque costumes were not, that wasn't the style. They were right, and that wasn't the style then. There were all these pop icons with huge careers, and they felt like they should look like them, and they should wear jeans and midriff tops. And they were like, this is so Motown. It's so over the top. But we liked over the top. We were from Texas. They looked different. And I think that was refreshing to the audience, because in the meantime, people were coming up to us all the time saying, we can't wait to see what you guys are going to have on next. And some of it looked a little crazy. I mean, I look at it like now, we look at it now. We were like, what were we thinking? But it was that time.
Well, how did you get the chutzpah? This is not a Texas word. I'm from New York, so I'm going to say it. The chutzpah to say to these people, this is what they want to wear.
I'll tell you. I was a sort of laid back, behind the scenes person, a little, I wouldn't say shy, but when it came to my girls, I was a beast, like most mothers are. You know, the mother bear comes out. And I would bring out badass Teeny B.
Who is badass
Teeny
B?
And I would stand up to people.
Who is badass Teeny B?
Badass Teeny B was this little girl who had to protect herself from the nuns and from the message that I wasn't enough and I didn't belong, and I had to fight. So I didn't have any problems saying, this is who they are. This is what they like. And people would be like, oh God, who is somebody's mama coming in here trying to tell me my job? But I fought for it. I fought with people, and I'm really proud of that.
You write a lot about your relationship with your ex in the book. Mm-hmm. It's moving and it's deep, and it had to have been hard to write about, very on and off and on and off.
On and off. Mm-hmm.
And I will say, for people who haven't had a chance to read the book yet, you don't let yourself off the hook. You talk about the ways in which you kind of participated in this.
Well, it takes two people to be in a relationship. And I just, for so many reasons, stayed in this relationship for way longer than I should have. But he was the first person in my life to really say, I won't say the first, but the second person that told me I could do anything and always said, oh, you got this. You can do this. He was always my biggest cheerleader. And that's hard to give up.
Did your daughters get input or a read in the book? Did they get
an edit? They haven't read the book.
They haven't read it.
They only read their parts.
Interesting.
The parts that they're involved in. They are kind of busy.
So how do you feel now that you've put your story out, that you've got it down on paper and it's out there for the world?
It's kind of scary. It's kind of scary. I tell you, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, did I just really do that? You know, it's a big deal, because you're opening yourself up. But it's important to me to tell my own story, especially in my family, because there's been so many narratives and so much speculation. And I just think everyone should write their story for their kids and their grandkids and their great-great-great-grandchildren. I wish I would have had that from my mother.
That's Teena Knowles. Her new book is called Matriarch, and it's out now.
That's all the time we have for this week's dialogue. Please join us at this time next week for our conversation with University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Chancellor Robert Jones about his 9 years of leadership at the university and his thoughts on the Trump administration targeting higher education because of DEI. The Dialogue team includes Kennedy Vincent, Ariel Raveny, Patricia Bradford, and Steve Mork. Our theme was composed by Lamont Holden. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Reginald Hardwick. We'll talk with you next week.